Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Episode 247 for the Love of the Game on the Bleed Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. The NCAA tournament is here. That's right, folks. March Madness kicks off this Thursday, and Bet Online is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contents out there, odds and lines and info for every game, every round right up until the national championship. So head to Bet Online today and get in on all the action, all the fun stuff that March Madness has to bring. Remember to use promo code BLEAV for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, BLEAV to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. With that said, episode 247 for the Love of the Game. Let's get this work.
Dress it up and make it real for me.
Eskimo, the coolest DJ in the world.
Whatever that freak off me. Spend a day to get my mind blown. Dress it up and go to Nassau. 200 miles on the dash. Got a roll a pound up a gas. Switching lanes in the Grand Rapids. We the one that kept it cool with all these D&T and G and start acting. Shooting the land like a film in a movie. And the gonna let them have it. We ballin' like the March Madness. All these cops shooting getting tragic. Only one to live and laugh.
All right, we are back. Episode 247 for the Love of the Game on the Bleav Podcast Network with yours truly. It's ATH Aaron Tobin. That's back in the saddle, back behind the mic, coming to you from Miami, Florida on a Sunday evening. And we're here, folks. We are here. Selection Sunday was today. We are going to talk all about it in today's episode. We're going to preview the bracket. I got a lot to talk about in college basketball. I had been doing my research. I've been watching more this last couple of days, and I think you can guess who we're having on. I can't wait to do this. It's one of my favorite episodes to do every single year. Right now, we are entering the best stretch in the sports calendar, in my opinion. All right? Everybody talks about NFL this, NFL that. Nonsense. Right now is the best stretch because starting this week, you have the NCAA tournament and the four best days of the year when it comes to sports viewing. The first 4 days of the NCAA tournament this weekend, starting on Thursday. Then, while that's going on, you have the Miami Open, which is this week. Hopefully, I'll be able to be in attendance to a session at least once. That'd be really nice. Then, from there, you go to down the stretch in the NBA and NHL, and you have NBA and NHL playoffs basically taking you from now through June. the best stretch of the sports calendar. Just wall-to-wall action nonstop. Baseball's going to start in a little bit. The Yankees got some troubling news about Gerrit Cole. Will he miss the entire year? Probably not, but can't say for certain. But whatever, that doesn't matter right now. Right now, we were going to be focusing on March Madness, which is going to be awesome. We'll get to that in just a second. But a couple of quick NBA thoughts before we bring on a recurring guest. There was some action this weekend, NBA action. I want to highlight three pretenders, major pretenders in the NBA. And we'll start off with none other than the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns lost to the Milwaukee Bucks today, 140 to 129. Giannis Antetokounmpo didn't play. Bobby Portis absolutely lit the Phoenix Suns up. Like, what is this team, the Phoenix Suns? They're projected to win 52 and a half games in Vegas before the season started. Like, what is this team? I'll tell you what it is. It is soft as Charmin, soft as baby shit. They're terrible defensively. They play way too much one-on-one basketball. I know Point Booker was a thing a couple of years ago, but they need a table setter in the worst way. They traded all their assets for Bradley Beal, who basically barely plays. He's been all right when he plays. But what is this team? It's just a disappointment. It's a disappointment. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're now eighth place in the Western Conference. Get this team to Cancun already. Send them on vacation for the rest of the year because they are not going anywhere, and get them off Prime.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Life is a highway,
and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Time, because they're embarrassing to watch. I know what the KD numbers say. He's been awesome, great, I don't care. Booker's been great individually, I don't care. This team is a disaster. Get them to Cancun already. I've had enough of them. Another team you can get to Cancun already is the LA Lakers. They've now lost two in a row after losing to Sacramento and Golden State in the last two games. They are 5-5 in their last 10 as well. Right now, they are 10th place in the Western Conference, 10th place, Anthony Davis, after getting manhandled by Domantas Sabonis again, he's now 0-10 in his last 10 head-to-head matches with Domantas Sabonis, which is a little embarrassing. You'd think the guy would toughen up one time against one of his bigger rivals in the Western Conference. You know, look at Anthony Davis's record against Sabonis, Jokic, and Embiid in his last couple of matchups against them. It's a disaster. I mean, that guy is the biggest theoretical superstar that this league has ever seen. But okay, he gets dominated by Sabonis again. He gets dominated by Sabonis and then leaves with an injury after 12 minutes against the Warriors. Just what is this guy? What is this guy? But congrats to LeBron James getting a 40-piece against the Warriors in another loss. But at least the I'm done with the 90s crowd will celebrate LeBron James. Oh, he couldn't shake Steph Curry at the end of the game, who I was told is a terrible defensive player, and that LeBron is this complete player with a complete bag. Get out of my face. Send the Lakers to Cancun. I've had enough of them. Get them off of primetime. And last but not least, the Dallas Mavericks. Dallas Mavericks are 6-4 in their last 10. They had a crazy win today against the Denver Nuggets, who had only lost one game since the All-Star break going into today. They were due for a little bit of a letdown. Kyrie Irving hits a crazy left-handed hook at the buzzer from like 17 feet out, just a wild shot. Awesome win by Dallas, but ultimately I spoke about it last week and Luka Doncic's tendencies and his winning habits and lack thereof. Ultimately, that's going to keep them from winning anything. It's a flawed roster. I don't care. Great. Congrats on today's win. Quick Knicks update after winning their last two games. I know one is against Portland, but a really good win against Sacramento where Isaiah Hartenstein did something that Anthony Davis couldn't do. Actually played Domantas Sabonis well and kept him in check, especially in the second half. Jalen Brunson was sensational. 45 points. Just awesome. And the New York Knicks are 14-1 in their last 15 games when OG Anunoby and Jalen Brunson play. I know I spoke about OG Anunoby last episode, but that seems kind of relevant. And last but not least, last NBA thing, is there's been a tendency that I absolutely love. Scoring was at an all-time high. Earlier this year, you had guys going for 70. It seems like every other night, there's the stretch Embiid, Luka, all these guys were going for 70 points in a game, and it was getting out of hand. And it all culminated an All-Star weekend, which was an absolute travesty of a performance that nobody played any defense. And it's no coincidence that after that, when people in the league office are all sitting together and they realize that the product is bad and that it's unwatchable and that it's non-competitive and it looks like guys aren't even competing on defense or aren't even being given the opportunity to compete on defense based on the way the officials were calling the game, that side bump, you know, offensive players basically leaning in, creating contact and then getting fouls. Since the All-Star break, the number of fouls being called is down. The number of free throws being shot is down. And scoring's been down. And guess what? The games are more entertaining to watch. No coincidence that this is coming in a year where the NBA TV rights are up and due to be renegotiated. The TV partners were like, listen, this stuff is garbage. It's a bad product. And you know what? I get on Adam Silver a lot. I think he's the worst commissioner in pro sports. I think he tries to be too buddy-buddy with the players. I've gone on this spiel many a times on this podcast, but I'll give him where credit's due. He realized that the gameplay was not very good, that the foul drawing by certain perimeter players is completely out of hand. Trae Young, James Harden, even my guy Jalen Brunson at points does a little too much foul hunting. I love Jalen Brunson, but it's true. I can do without some of the foul hunting. And after All-Star weekend, when everybody got together, it's like, we need to fix this. The referees have been more in tune and they've stopped calling the side bump. They stopped calling it when players fling their arms into a defender and, you know, expect a shooting foul. And that's wonderful. This is awesome. Now, the general managers and the coaches are going to be like, why are you changing this now, middle of the year? Well, you know what? Because the product sucked and it needs to be changed, all right? And better late than never. This is a good thing. Now, it's going to benefit some teams that play a little bit more physical. I mean, honestly, I know I talked about Jalen Brunson's foul hunting, but it may benefit the Knicks because they're a grinded out defensive team. I mean, they've had a stretch recently where they've held teams under 80 in three straight games. It will help the Miami Heat. We'll see what it will do with the Denver Nuggets. I think the Boston Celtics will get hurt by this a little bit, but regardless, this is a good thing. It's a good thing. So kudos to Adam Silver for finally figuring something out and helping the NBA become a better product to watch. Anyway, just a couple of quick NBA thoughts before we talk about all things March Madness, getting into the bracket, all that good stuff with the recurring guest. I think you know who it is, and where you get to him in just a matter of moments. So he's back. It's a very special time of year. None other than Jordan Marks, my college football guy, my college basketball guy. He's going to teach me all the things I need to know. We do this every year. I love doing this every year. Jordan, welcome back. It's good to be back.
Absolutely. Best time of year. Can't wait.
I said it in the monologue, like this stretch of sports viewing is my favorite time of the year because it's March Madness into NBA playoffs, into NHL playoffs. And obviously, you know, being a Knicks and a Rangers fan, we're looking like we may be in the mix a little bit deep into June or at least deep into May. So it's just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Baseball starting, but no one really cares. And, but I mean, then this week, Thursday, Friday, the two best days of the year.
100%. Catch up on sleep now because it's a lot of basketball to consume over those next.
A lot of basketball. You know, when you're watching the 10:30 tip off and you have a headache, it's on True TV. But you know what? This is what we live for. So there's a lot that I want to talk about. Obviously, we're going to do what we normally do. We preview the bracket, but you know, college sports in general, the landscape is completely different, right, than what it used to be. And obviously the NCAA, you know, were such thieves for such a long time. And now with the NIL, you know, situations and conference realignment, that the NCAA is coming under fire. Obviously a lot of this is football driven, but basketball wise, like where are we at with college basketball right now? Because they announced, you know, the bracket yesterday, and basically at the same time, the transfer portal opens. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, those are both two big topics, obviously, in college sports with conference realignment and the transfer portal and NIL. It's all interconnected, right? So if we back up and get to what the root of it is, it's revenue that's exploding from TV deals associated with not basketball, football, right? These are exorbitant revenue streams, and it's essentially a race to make sure that your program is not left behind and gets a seat at the table. So this is the cause between anything to do with conference realignment, right?
Yeah.
Anything from the erasure of the Pac-12 to Florida State's lawsuit against the ACC to release it from its shackles to even something as small as like UMass leaving the Atlantic 10 to go to the MAC. It's all football. It's all TV rights deals that are just going to snowball into the billions with a B over the next few years. But from a college basketball fan, obviously I don't like it. The most important thing to me is like traditions and rivalries and game day atmosphere, the sanctity of the NCAA tournament. You know, I don't want them expanding this tournament to make more revenue from basketball. But the right thing for me, what they should be doing is separating football from the rest of the sports. Forgetting that it's just basketball generates some revenue by way of the NCAA tournament. But why should, like, for example, Rutgers Gymnastics have to travel to Eugene, Oregon for a meet? There's nothing there. It doesn't make sense. The players never knew each other. There's no sense of any rivalry, and it's expensive, and it's a money waster. So, like, I don't understand why that happened.
But hold on. But how would they separate it? How would they separate it? Like,
what would that look like? They already do it in other sports. I mean, basketball has conferences that don't exist in football. In hockey, you have Notre Dame in the Big Ten. There's in Oregon, the Pac-12.
I guess Notre Dame is in the ACC for basketball.
Right. In baseball, there's totally different. The Pac-12 looks totally different in baseball. But anyway, that it's you can separate it, obviously. By the way, it's going to be separate soon once this Super League happens, which is going to happen. So eventually it's going to do it. Just do it now. Like, cut ties with football. And I love football, and I'm going to like football. There's going to be a lot of high-level games. There's not going to be a lot of cupcakes anymore because these leagues are huge. And whatever. Football is football. The money is insane compared to the other sports. But keep basketball the way it is. And then
so even if they separate, you don't have a fear, because the whole idea of separating is basically the SEC and the Big Ten, who are the drivers in college football in terms of being the two biggest conferences. You don't think that they would take their talents in basketball and just be like, we're doing our own postseason because we could essentially do it for football, so why not just do it for basketball also?
And no, I don't, because I think that the NCAA tournament is the only thing that anyone makes money off, really. I like, even the biggest games in the SEC and the Big Ten on a weeknight, a Wednesday night in February, does not make money like the NCAA tournament will make. It doesn't. Like, the NCAA tournament is the prized possession that the NCAA has hanging over all of this. So that's that. And then, I mean, you mentioned the portal, right? Like, if you want to come back to that.
Yeah.
Portal right now is the wild, wild west. I mean, I think, like, driving some major coaching icons to calling it quit earlier, which is just a side effect, right? And the portal is crazy. It's really hard to deal with. You have to re-recruit your players every year. And they are not under contract, so there's nothing stopping them from leaving. This also has a direct correlation with football, because it's all driven by money. The portal's open because players have rights. If a coach can leave on a whim, why can't a player? NIL is legal, though, so what are you going to do? A player can get paid, which they should. Then they should have.
Wait, hold on, but one second. But Deion Sanders actually said something very interesting, right? Where he was saying that, you know, name, image, and likeness means that these players are, you know, they need to be promoting something, a product. Now, some of them do, right? Actually, you saw, like, an example of his son's promoting the Google smartphone, right? Like, they were on commercials. That, to me, makes sense. But what it seems like it's happening is they're putting this pool of money together, and it's basically pay for play. That's not what name, image, and likeness means.
Yeah, but no one's going to court over this, right? So,
right, no, but it goes back to the whole thing where it's just like, you know, and again, I'm not saying that, you know, kids shouldn't be able to, you know, have an income, even if it's doing a local TV commercial at a car dealership in, for example, you know, a kid in Michigan doing it in Ann Arbor. Like, there's no problem with that.
No problem.
It's like, it's just pro sports at the college level.
It's a minor league, right? Yeah, it's a minor league.
It's crazy to me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think this is so close to having them be employees, right? This is going to be an employee-employer relationship with a collective bargaining agreement where you're under contract. And that
that's going to ruin college sports, because what's going to happen is if they're going to be employees, most of these programs and a lot of the programs that we see in the NCAA tournament, the mid-majors, aren't going to be able to afford it, and they're going to drop the programs.
So there's two things here. They still get at most schools, except for, let's just call it 30 to 40 schools. This is a totally separate thing. Those 30 and 40 schools, they could do pay for play, but they're not going to do pay for play on the level of football. Like, yeah, you have Kansas, Kentucky, whatever. They have big collectives that want to spend a lot of money on basketball, but it's not going to separate them from the rest of the pack. It just won't. And still, tuition is something, right? And they are, and they will get them at the other 300 programs in America, right? So that still exists. And still, you want the notoriety, you want playing time and whatnot. So I still think, like, it is something. Yes, this is going to hurt basketball a little, but it's football is on another scale for sure.
I just think we're in a time right now where, I don't want to say college sports are in danger, because it's just going to look different, but it's really not what, I don't want to say it's supposed to be, but you know what I'm saying, right? Like, it's not what we grew up with. And again, there are some improvements, but like, It just seems that ultimately the product is going to suffer eventually. Like, there's going to be a point where the rubber meets the road and the product is going to suffer.
If you get into it, like you're talking about the product, but you know, this is the best thing for the sport is that these players aren't being taken advantage of, especially at the top, at the highest of level. And you know, if they don't want to come to college and they want to get paid, there's other routes also, right? We're already seeing that. So,
right. Well, not as much for, you know, football, but definitely for basketball, which brings us to our next topic about the overall field. The NBA draft big boards, not a whole lot of guys in the NCAA tournament in the top 10 or in the lottery. Like Isaiah Collier for USC, not in the tournament, right? So you contrast that to, and I think we can both agree that the biggest star in college basketball right now is on the women's side in Caitlin Clark. And you can make a case that Angela Reese might be the second biggest star, you know, also on the women's side. Do you think that this NCAA tournament, and again, like I think men's college basketball had a great week because conference tournament week, which affected the way the selection committee had to pick teams, and the bubble shrank. We'll get all into that in a second. But do you think there's a little less juice normally? And this will rectify itself next year because Cooper Flagg is going to be at Duke, and he is like a generational prospect. But do you think this year's tournament is lacking a little juice nationally as compared to other years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's no doubt. Caitlin Clark is a unicorn. I mean, I'm wondering if, like, there are some people that know Caitlin Clark more than some of the players in the NBA, that she is that famous. And you know, her logo threes are just iconic at this point. So, you know, to say that she's always, like, there's always going to be a player on the women's side that's more popular than anyone on the men's side.
But she's an anomaly. She's an anomaly. She's coming up in the perfect era for her, right? Where we've got, I don't want to say political unrest, but we have this whole thing about, you know, female sports that they're doing this push, social media era. She can now be in a State Farm ad, by the way, which would constitute naming.
Yeah. And she had that whole rift with Angel Reese last year. So
right, which was great theater. And yeah. I mean, the test is going to be ultimately, you know, the WNBA is a leech on the NBA. It does not make any money. But it'd be interesting to see if she's, you know, by her force of personality, if she's able to elevate the WNBA to a place that it wasn't before. I'm a little skeptical. But for right now, like, she's probably the most, outside of football, she's the most famous college athlete in
America. Totally. And you know, I think your question about the product is more for you, just because I'm a college basketball junkie. And I'm gonna love college basketball because of the programs and the players and the coaches. And I love all this stuff. But is the question really, like, are the most recognizable players coming from college? Are they, or are they even coming domestically, or are they coming from the international game? And the expansion of the international game, is that hurting USA basketball? Is that the question?
Yeah, but like last year,
I don't think the G League is killing the product, right? Like, how many, like, if we had some of these G League guys, it's not going to, I don't think you're going to say, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, but last year, like, you know, I actually think Scoot Henderson would have been better off playing college basketball than in the G League, because I think that, yeah, it was playing against grown men, but there are hostile environments and playing on TV and knowing that your games are going to be seen, and that if you're a top five pick in the draft, that you're going to be dissected a little bit differently. Like, you know, I think it was great for Brandon Miller, but for Brandon Miller, like, he showed out and, you know, was the second overall pick, and he's actually really, really good in the NBA. But like, we do have it year over year. I just think this year's a weird year that, again, it's not a good NBA draft, but, you know, I think the tournament nationally is lacking a little juice if it doesn't have some recognizable name. Yeah.
I wasn't even mentioning, like, we've talked about the G League thing before, but I was more so saying the expansion of the international game, and I wonder how many drafts are going to be you know, more than 50% from the lottery is going to be from international basketball versus USA basketball. So, because I did see the mock drafts, I looked at it before this, and I was like, holy shit, like, that's a lot of.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, there's like two French guys who are going to be in the top five or something. That's like, crazy. I just think this is a bad draft. So if you're a team that's tanking, like, congratulations, you missed it by a year. But yeah, I just, it would be nice if it had a little bit more juice, but, and I'm a little bit more of a, I'm way more of a casual than you are. So yeah, it would be nice if I, you know, a couple of guys were more recognizable, but those couple of days leading up, it's like you almost forget about it because you get in the spirit of things and you get excited all over again.
And players will make their names for themselves. Yeah. Like, but I just remember that iconic Michigan State Kansas State game in the Garden last year, and you know, Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson and went up against Tyson Walker and AJ Hogarth. And it was just such an awesome game, and like everybody remembered yes. Kansas State. And the Florida Atlantic guys, and they're back. And like, oh, it was just, you know, heroes will be made.
There always are. Let me ask you this, because we touched on a little bit more about the conferences, and we're going to get into the selection and maybe call for a little bit of justice for the Big East. But UConn winning this year, considering what we just talked about with football, right, where there is a fear, even though I don't think you think it's going to happen, but there's that small fear that the SEC and the Big Ten can kind of go their own way, right? If UConn wins again, the Big East will now have won four of the last eight. I think that's important for, you know, college basketball, for somebody, you know, in a conference that's not the SEC or the Big Ten to win, just because it gives it validation. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, addressing the SEC and the Big Ten thing, I think that noise is totally football driven. I don't think I'll have the sack to let go of the revenue stream of the NCAA tournament. Like, even this year, like, Wisconsin plays James Madison. I think that's infinitely more exciting than Wisconsin playing like Missouri, you know? And like the value of having to forego, like, the St. Peter's Peacocks are back in and they're playing against Tennessee. And for them to have to play Tennessee, and if they were to win, to play a program like Texas is incredible. And you lose all that if you leave the NCAA tournament. So that's it. The SEC and the Big Ten got 14 teams in the field. That is 40% of the at-large bids. So they're fine here. They're already, like, they're getting their due. UConn vindication for the Big East. The Big East is awesome. We could talk about the Big East. UConn's awesome. Danny's probably the coach of the year. He lost four of the top five scorers, and they look better than this year. I went to the game this weekend. They're awesome. I mean, they're so good. St. John's had them against the ropes, but they are dominant. And I don't know how much it says about the, like, yeah, they dominated in league play. But I think it just says something about that program. That is beyond a bona fide blue blood. I mean, they have – Danny's got things going in the right direction beyond belief. Top of the sport.
This awesome. Is Calhoun era in the 90s. Like, it's that level of success.
And unbelievable. He literally restarted. I mean, they had Klingon and they had Tristan Newton, but he basically had to restart. I mean, he lost three or four of the top five. So
I texted you a couple of weeks ago offline, and I said, is Duke as hateable under John Shire as they have been against Krzyzewski? And then what ensues is the court storming, the Kyle Filipowski quote-unquote injury where Jay Billis lost his shit, which was embarrassing, right? And then Filipowski trips another guy in another game. They lose to UNC, I think the last game of the regular season, and Shire's apologizing to the fans. And it turns out Duke is still as hateable as ever.
I remember like when they lost to UNC and he's apologizing. And the fans are throwing bottles on the court. that was absurd. The Filipowski, like, flop was hilarious and stupid.
It was just all those things rolled into one. It was just so perfect. Yeah. It's just like, the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's beautiful.
I think some of the Duke hatred, like, I think some of that luster is a bit off since Coach K left. Like, Coach K was,
you know, lecturing the players afterwards about sportsmanship when he loses.
So good. I mean, I even think some of the hatred started like rubbing off when he started to just change how the program like recruited talent. Like when the Zion and RJ and Cam Reddish team, I don't think that was like a hateable team. Like,
because
like,
everybody loves Zion at that point.
Right. And like
such a mesmerizing
team with like Paolo and Keels and Mark, like that was like a not a hateable team either. I just, you know, I think people are always going to love to hate on Duke. The Cameron crazies are extraordinarily nerdy and dweebs and hateable. Filipowski, what, probably a lottery pick. And then you got this year, you have Jeremy Roach and Jared, who's been there forever. And you got McCain and Proctor, who look like NBA players. Like, this is a good team. And, you know, we'll see what they can do in March. But they definitely have some ballers.
I like Proctor as like a late first round pick. Like I just think he knows how to play. It'll be interesting to see. I haven't really dove into the NBA draft, but it'll be interesting to see where he goes or where he's projected right now. One last thing before we get into this year's bracket. Your boys, the Wolverines, was not a great year. Michigan's own Juwan Howard, celebrated member of the Fab Five, done coaching Michigan after 5 years. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I don't want to take too much time on this podcast on the last place team in the Big Ten, but I mean, it would have been a fireable offense had he not been fired. Like you'd have to look internally at the athletic director. I mean, you have a program of Michigan standing that, you know, had been to the Big Dance 9 of 10 seasons to miss the field 2 years, where last year you had 2 lottery picks and an All-American in Hunter Dickinson, and you missed the field. That's insane. And then this year you have the worst season in Michigan basketball in decades, and you finish dead last and you win 3 Big Ten games. Beyond that, you have all your off the court issues between telling Mark Turgeon he's going to kill him and getting into a slap fight with Greg Gard at Wisconsin. And then whatever, something with the strength and conditioning coach where he got into a fight with this year. With all this off the court stuff and his inability to understand how the transfer portal works, and what getting kids admitted are, and then not having backup plans, not knowing how to compose a roster, not knowing what late game execution even looks like. I don't need to go off on this because I'm already well into the coaching search at this point. So love Juwan for what he did for Fab Five. Hope he could still help the next coach for a transition and help him with recruiting and whatnot. Juwan's rich, he'll be fine. I don't feel that bad.
And by the way, for everybody who can't see, Jordan is wearing his Michigan Wolverines national championship football hat. So I don't think he really cares that much because he's still riding that high.
And to tie that bow, we are the national champions. So
precisely. All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Now we're going to do all things this year's bracket now that we got all that stuff out of the way. All right. So now let's look at the bracket as a whole. So I ask you this every single year, you know, once it came out, how do you think the committee did in terms of putting together the field? Because a lot of people, and I think, you know, those of us in the tri-state area or tri-state area fans are pretty annoyed that the Big East only got three teams when they were one of the three best conferences all year. Now, again, there were a lot of bid stealers in terms of teams winning their conference tournaments that weren't supposed to win them, like Oregon, like NC State, that basically killed St. John's chances and Seton Hall's chances. But how do you think the committee did, and does the Big East deserve a little bit more justice than what they were given?
Yeah. I mean, usually I come on here, past 2 years at least, and I'm generally content with the process. Leave out a team or two, it's fine. Bubble is challenging. It's usually pretty big, so you got to pick one mediocre team over another, and I'm not going to be that upset. This year, I don't even know how upset I am about the teams that were in or out. Yes, I agree. The Big East got hosed. And the way they expressed it, with like Providence and St. John's being nowhere even near the cut line, is kind of absurd. And backfilling with like Virginia, Michigan State, and Florida Atlantic is like being way in is ridiculous. But even that, I could probably sleep at night, because in the end, it's the bubble. And, you know, I can explain that, like you said, four teams, they said five teams, but like New Mexico being a bid thief is ridiculous. They had five quad one wins, top 25 by all metrics. So four teams stole the bids, shrinking the bubble. That's unprecedented, right? So, right. But that's also what's awesome about Conference Championship Week. You get stories like Kemba Walker and DJ Burns, the big guy on NC State, right?
That guy is awesome.
Yeah, so it sucked that the Big East got left out and shitty Virginia's in the field. But, like, you know, if St. John's didn't lose by a single possession to Creighton, UConn, Marquette, or get blasted by terrible Michigan and Boston College, they'd be in the field. So, and the point of the bubble is you had the opportunity to get in and you didn't get in. So I won't lose sleep over those teams not getting in, because they had chances to get in. My biggest disgust really is seeding. Do you want to?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, Seton Hall also, the committee instituted the quad one, you know, the quad that system in terms of, you know, making it more transparent in what they're doing. And it just seems like, you know, if they say that the ACC is down all year, and again, NC State stole a bit, right? So we can't use them as an example. But, like, Virginia stunk all year. Seton Hall and St. John's had good resumes. Like, how do you take Virginia over either of those teams? I mean, I personally wanted to see Rick Pitino in the field, right? Selfishly, because, you know, he's a character. St. John's hasn't been relevant in a long, long time. But it just seems like the committee wasn't consistent with what their own metrics are. And that, I mean, to me seems a little strange.
I like agree with you on everything that you said, right? Like you said, like Seton Hall, they have more quality wins than Virginia. They look better than Virginia. But what does Virginia have, like, as opposed to Seton Hall? They played a tougher non-conference schedule. But like when you look at like their actual wins next to each other, Seton Hall is 9-11 in the first two quadrants. Virginia's 10-10. And when you're that close, it doesn't matter, because the way that the quadrants are set up, it's like, okay, a quad two game is an arbitrary number. It's teams ranked 50 to 125. But if you're 126, it's no longer that anymore, which is arbitrary, right? So, you know, Seton Hall lost one game that was, I believe, to like Georgetown or DePaul. That makes it look so bad, right? And it just, you're picking between tiny things. And I know it makes or break a program if you make the tournament. But again, like, I'm not going to lose sleep over this, because it's, yes, it sucks. And yes, like, I would have loved the Johnnies to be in. I've been to multiple Johnnies games this year. I love St. John's. I love that program. I think Patino's obviously got it going in the right direction. If they were even on the bubble in his first year, that's incredible. And I think he's about to just go after carnage in the transfer portal, and they're going to be awesome next year. But, you know, that's not my main gripe. My main gripe is that I think the committee did the worst job it's ever done with seeding. And I think it was disgusting. I thought North Carolina would always be the fourth one seed. I actually thought they would be. Great resume, great metrics, no bad losses, really strong strength of schedule. But Iowa State definitely had a case for it. So if Iowa State has a case for it, they have to be the first number two seed in my mind, because right. Their resumes are essentially identical. And they were not only not the number one seed, they were not only the number one, two seed, they were the last number two seed, putting them in the UConn thing. And what has the committee said? They said, what matters is non-conference strength of schedule, which pissed me off so much, because I don't understand how you can place teams on a matrix in a ranking basis and say that something that they attempted to do or didn't attempt to do matters more than actual accomplishments. Iowa State has 10 quad one wins, the same number of losses as UNC. They blew through their conference tournament, including a blowout victory over Houston. They have better computer numbers than everyone not named UConn, Purdue, or Houston. They have the best defense in America and play in the far and away best conference in America. So, like, for them to get this UConn region, yeah, which is a tough region.
They should have gotten the Purdue spot.
For sure. Or just the UNC one. But
right.
And now they have to play in Omaha, where, you know, Drake is in that same little quadrant, and Drake's right next to Omaha. And then Illinois and BYU loaded with talent and shooting, and Auburn and San Diego State. It's just it's a lot. It's really tough for them. And then my other gripe seed wise is just, you know, again, like, I can have qualms about Michigan State or Florida Atlantic getting into the field for what I quietly think is non-actual 2024 accomplishments. Michigan State just being Michigan State and Tom Izzo and Sparty.
It helps all the time. And anybody who thinks it doesn't is naive. It's
crazy. And it helped Gonzaga go from the bubble to a five seed. But and Florida Atlantic, I think what happened in 2023 probably got them to be an eight seed this year, which is, last year I was on here saying they are underseeded. This year, I think they are way overseeded. But what I think is that the Mountain West actually got screwed here. And I know you texted me offline that, like, you know, why isn't Seton Hall or St. John's in the Mountain?
They got teams. They got more teams than they ever would have gotten.
They got in the field, but they are horribly seeded. And I know this shouldn't matter. They haven't had much success, like, until last year when San Diego State made the Final Four. But the Mountain West, like, in terms of competitiveness and talent, is much closer to the Big Ten and the SEC than it is to the Atlantic 10 and the American, by all metrics. Anyone who watched college basketball knows that Utah State or Boise or Nevada or Colorado State can play with any of those high major teams. So they got shafted on their seed lines. Like, how could the regular season champion Utah State, with, you're going to watch this guy, great Ozabor, he's awesome. How the hell could they be an eight seed? That doesn't make any sense. I would think like a five or a six seed. And that's not only bad seeding, that sucks for TCU, who has to then play them. Because now TCU, who's, you know, probably rightfully on the nine seed, is going to have to play like a five or six seed. So that stinks. And then you go down the line, and now you're going to play Colorado State has to, you know, they've had six quad one wins, and now they have to play against Virginia in a sleepy gym in Dayton to even make the real field on tomorrow night. Like, I just think, like, yeah, they might lose that game, but, like, they should be in the field firmly because of their accomplishments. You know, I can keep going on that, but this has nothing to do with bid thieves. This is just bad and blatant disregard for what they've previously told us matters, that I don't think it matters anymore. And, you know, full season resume is what should matter. Accomplishments should matter.
we're obviously not going to be annoyed about this come Wednesday night and Thursday, like 12 o'clock Thursday. None of this matters anymore. We just want the action. But yeah, it is kind of frustrating. And we do have to pour one out, a special little pour one out for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in Indiana State, who I think we both wanted to see in the dance. Guy doesn't necessarily look like a world-class athlete, but is quite the ball player. Great nickname, story program of Larry Bird. Like we wish we could have gotten him in as well, because they were a top 25 team for a while.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I agree. Robbie Avila is who you're talking about. Pour one out. It was really awesome. What everybody wanted was the play-in game of Michigan State, Indiana State, to have that rematch of the great Larry Bird magic.
By the way, that is still the number one highest rated college basketball game in the history of the NCAA tournament. Still, yeah, to this day, 1979.
So, but as the bubble started shrinking, I was just like, oh man, sorry. Indiana State.
Got no chance.
Not in that conference. No.
So you mentioned that UConn kind of got hosed a little bit by having Iowa State, who is the strongest two seed in its region. It got Auburn, a team that won the SEC, which was considered a pretty strong conference, as the four seed. I think that was a little rough. I mean, again, personal bias here. I'm pulling for my guy, Bruce Pearl, because he's one of us, a proud member of the tribe. So pulling for Bruce Pearl. So if UConn got kind of shafted as being the number one overall seed, like which one seed do you think got the best draw?
Yeah. Well, I honestly don't think UConn got the toughest draw. I think it's a toss up, but I think I slightly lean Purdue's draw is tougher.
But they deserve to have a tougher draw.
Yes, but they don't deserve to have the toughest draw. But at the same time, like if you just go down their draw, you know, I highly doubt they're going to drop another 16 seed game. But that 8-9 matchup, like I said, is an underseeded Utah State team. And then, you know, you got an extremely physical defensive outfit in TCU with Jamie Dixon on the other side. And then, you know, then you get Kansas potentially, who by that time you'd think Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough are going to be healthy. Which, like, you know, playing Bill Self in a Sweet 16 game is never fun. And then you got really nightmare matchups against Creighton, who I think matches up really well with Purdue between the shooting and Ryan Kalkbrenner to neutralize Edie down low. And then you get Tennessee, who, you know, always year in, year out, one of the best defensive teams in the country. And this time they have Dalton Knecht, which is a truly high level productive scorer, going to be a first team All-American, amazing, amazing player. So Purdue to me probably slightly edges out UConn, but that UConn region, yeah, it definitely smells like region of death also. So if you're asking easiest draw,
I think UNC's draw is the most favorable draw of all the one seeds.
Yeah, to me, UNC's draw, which is, you know, I guess a gift for being shipped out to Los Angeles for the regionals, but at the same time, they either get that Michigan State squad that I didn't think should be in the field. And then, you know, Michigan State went 3-9 against quality opponents and didn't win one of those away from the Breslin Center. They've got good guards, good defensive team, but they don't shoot the ball very well or foul prone. And then if they lose, you got Mississippi State that lost its last four regular season games, turns the ball over more than any team in any high major team in the field, which against UNC is a recipe for disaster. And then from there you get St. Mary's team, which I actually really like this St. Mary's team. But I don't know if they have enough to deal with UNC's length or athleticism. And I do think RJ Davis would be able to go toe to toe with Aiden Mahaney from St. Mary's or Alabama, if they can even get there. But Alabama have yet to see play defense in the last 2 months. And it's
not the same Alabama team as it's been the last couple of years.
It's not, they don't play defense. I think that literally you're like South Beach rec team could drop 100 on them. But like,
yeah, it's a bucket Monday's got a game tonight in Hollywood.
So, yeah. And then like, you got a young Baylor team, but Baylor definitely has a lot of offensive punch. Jacoby Walter is definitely a name that should be on your NBA radar. but they also, they're young, they struggle with turnovers. And then the two seed in their region is Arizona. And Arizona's
ultimate Jekyll and Hyde team.
Arizona's super athletic as always, and definitely is fun to watch, but they do live or die sometimes by Caleb Love a little bit too much, which we've all seen before. And we saw that in the Pac-12 tournament, where it's just like, if Caleb Love goes 2 for 14 to start off the game, you're kind of like effed. So to me, UNC probably got the most favorable draw, but again, they have to do it all on the West Coast, but I think UNC fans will travel regardless.
Yeah, and when you travel private with the accommodations that I'm sure UNC has and their resources, I'm not really sure that's a big deal. The Houston region. Obviously, you know, Big 12 was the best conference in college basketball this year. Houston did not win its conference tournament. They looked a little weird in their loss. What do you make of Houston right now?
Yeah, I mean, definitely they came up against it against Iowa State. And, you know, Houston, I still think, like, they're awesome. Like, Jamal said,
because they're the number two overall one seed, right? Like, they were the second one seed.
Yeah, so, and, you know, to go 30-4 is incredible. Particularly when you play in that conference. I mean, to do that night in, night out, I mean, it's incredible. They are relentless on defense. They routinely play games in the 60s or lower. And they're going to be really, really, really challenging to play, to prep for on a quick turnaround. They have a ton of experience. Kelvin Sampson's a great coach. But, you know, at some point, you do come against a team that can go toe to toe with you, and match that physicality and match that rebounding. I mean, they've got a trio of guards that are awesome, and LJ Cryer, Emmanuel Sharpe, and Jamal Shedd. So we'll see. They have the experience. They've been there before, right? They just have to break through, and that's it. And I definitely think this team is capable of doing it. It's not the toughest region, but you know. They are going to be they're obviously the favorite to come out of there, but you know, especially with Tyler Kolek and Marquette being potentially injured, so we'll see. Kentucky's in the region, and like we spoke about before, Kentucky has the most NBA players on their roster. It's not even close. I think they have 7 or 8 projected players to go in the first 2 rounds of the NBA draft, which is insane. But that doesn't make an NCAA tournament winner. So we'll see. We'll see. That'll be a fun region.
Let me ask you this. Last year, we had absolute madness in the Final Four. I think we had a 7 and 8 seed. Like, I think, you know, UConn was a 4 and 1 the whole thing. I mean, we had higher seeds make it all the way through. This year, and we say every year that we end up going a lot of chalk. Is there 1 5 seed or higher that you have circled right now that can make the second weekend that you really think has a good shot of making the second?
Yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, part of, we always do this every year, is picking brackets is so stupid and such a waste. I can watch so much college basketball and people do ask
me. It doesn't mean anything, but still, it's the best.
So, yeah, and I'm probably going to be pretty chalky in everything I do. But I downplayed St. Mary's a little, but I do like them. I'm not going to say Duke here because – you know, the hatred of Duke that we just went for. And I have a lot of Badger friends out there that'll be listening, and they're on the other side in the round of 32. So what I'm going to go with a seed higher than 5. I'm going to go with BYU. I really like this BYU team, and this is their first year in that league. And they, to be in the first year in the Big 12 and to be in a solid like 6 seed is wildly impressive. And they have a mix of kind of everything I like in March. First and foremost, like matchup-wise, they're playing against Duquesne, a team that has no business being in the tournament, but they won their conference tournament in an empty Barclays Arena yesterday, and they got it done. So BYU gets that favorable matchup. BYU is a team that launches more three-pointers in volume than anyone else in the country. They play extremely fast. They're dominant on the glass on both ends. They have a ton of depth. Because of how fast they play and their style of play, they're really difficult to prep for, and that's really important. on short turnarounds. And then, you know, they have Illinois in round in the round of 32 if both teams are chalk. And I do think Illinois is great. They have a ton of length, ton of experience. But I think Illinois is really susceptible to giving up the three. And I think that's a death blow when it comes to playing BYU. So beyond that, Illinois, Coleman Hawkins is a flex big. And, you know, BYU has, that's exactly how BYU plays. And, you know, Terrence Shannon's super athletic. I assume he's going to play at the next level just by if anyone watches him. But again, the way they play, the way they struggle to defend specific areas where BYU excels, I think that they should be in that second weekend.
So the two that I had written down was, and I know they probably didn't deserve to get in, but again, they were kind of a bid stealer. I'm taking a look at Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Dana Altman's record in the NCAA tournament is fantastic. And he generally wins at least two games. So, and I'm looking at his draw, like, do you love South Carolina? Like, they could maybe take care of business there. Do you love Creighton that much? Like, that was one team that I had, you know, a little bit of an eye on. And the other one was Florida, the seventh seed. Again, because of the injury, you know, the injuries that Marquette is dealing with. And if they get to the second round and it's Kentucky, like, they've seen Kentucky, you know? So those are two teams I had, you know, kind of circled in terms of.
The Oregon one's interesting. I think a lot of it is recency bias because
1,000%.
How they ran through. I mean, the problem, South Carolina is, you know, they could beat South Carolina. I think that's a coin flip game. South Carolina, you're dealing with a bunch of like fifth year, like older dudes, and older dudes like really are physical, get after it on defense. And I really like their coach, Lamal Paris. And then, you know, Creighton, I love Creighton. That's going to be a tough matchup for Oregon, but we'll see. I like you said, Dana Altman's amazing. And, you know, what they did and what Folly Dante did, and they're a good team, and we'll see. I mean, they definitely got their win over Arizona on Friday night was amazing, and then
By the way, after Arizona beat them three times in a row during the regular season and smacked them the time before that by like 30 points,
that's one. And that's Florida was another team I was thinking about saying for this too. Florida's been really impressive, especially over the last month of the season. Florida's guards are awesome. They ran into a really physical defense in Auburn, and really Walter Clayton and Zion Pullen really struggled. But, you know, Florida's a team that can absolutely do it. And like you said, I really like Shaka says Tyler Kolek is healthy. We haven't seen him play, and supposedly that oblique injury was extraordinarily sharp pain. And I you know, like, they'll never say anything, and we don't know. And Marquette is Tyler Kolek, and like Oso Godaro is great. Cam Jones is their leading scorer, but Tyler Kolek is the engine that makes that car go. So we'll see.
So besides for Marquette, who just because of that injury would probably be the most vulnerable top three seed to lose in the first weekend, who would the other one be if you had to take Marquette out of the equation?
To me, I think I would probably go with Baylor, only because, like I said, like they are susceptible to turnovers, and, you know, to lose the first game, I don't know, like, Colgate is a weird, slow, low-tempo team that, you know, values possessions, shoots a lot of threes, like, maybe that could happen, but you know, beyond that, I think I'd go with Baylor to potentially get knocked off as a three when they came up against, I guess, that would be, either like a New Mexico or Clemson. I could totally see New Mexico knocking off Baylor or Clemson. I was thinking about going with Kentucky, but, man, they're just so talented. But who knows? They could take – they also really struggled defensively for similar reasons that – that like Alabama does, but even more so, right? They're just loaded with NBA talent and high offensive ceiling, but at the same time, like, they have taken off full games of playing defense, and you can't take off one game if you're trying to make it to Phoenix. So we'll see.
What's your number one can't miss game of the first round?
Oh, man, I
that you're going to be really locked in. It's just like, it's your favorite matchup of the weekend. It's going to be on the main screen in terms of, I'm sure, having three screens going. It's going to be on the main screen. You're going to be dialed in. What's the number one most intriguing matchup that you want to watch the most?
I mean, there's definitely a couple here. I think for me, the one that I've like circled for a little since it came out, it's stupid, but Gonzaga McNeese State, I think is awesome. I know that's not going to like jump off the page for a lot of people. But you know, Gonzaga is a team that I think was a little bit overseeded, but at the same time, it's Gonzaga. You're still dealing with, you know, Ryan Nembhard, Nolan Hickman, and Anton Watson, who are we've all known, and then the addition of Graham Ike. So Gonzaga, high offensive ceiling, but obviously they've been susceptible, you know, lost to St. Mary's twice this year. And McNeese, that's the return of Will Wade. So you have that really aggressive defense, that VCU-style defense. And then you have Shahada Wells, who literally started for a tournament team in TCU last year. And he's been explosive. And this McNeese State can definitely knock off Gonzaga. They can definitely knock off a Power Five teams, as they've actually shown this year. They beat Michigan, which, whatever. But at the same time, they're good. That's a game that I had circled. And then, you know, I'm personally, this is not like a game that a lot of people would be interested in, but the Florida Atlantic Northwestern game is really interesting to me. I mean, Boo Booey, this is his second year in the tournament straight. Northwestern's now a perennial tournament team. It's crazy to say, but them playing against Elijah Martin and John L. Davis from the Owls, that everyone now is saying should not have been in the tournament, or if they should have, they should be in Dayton. I think like an experienced Northwestern outfit like that against this Florida Atlantic team just has a lot of intrigue for me.
I'm going to go with the Pardon My Take Bowl. Wisconsin against James Madison.
Awesome. Why is James Madison have to? I know Big Cat is a Wisconsin guy.
Well, PFT went to James Madison.
Oh, he did. Okay.
So I'm going to go with the Part of My Take Bowl because, A, you know, I've been listening to that podcast since it's come out for the last 8 years. And James Madison's weird. Like, they were in the top 25 this year, too. They're now a 12 seed. Big Cat's been complaining about Wisconsin all year, and then now he's roped back in. Like, that to me, I had circled. And the other one, I mean, I had FAU Northwestern only just because of what FAU did last year. I want to see the guys over at NC State play against Texas Tech.
I love it. The James Madison Wisconsin game, it definitely one I circled as well, just because, again, I have a lot of friends that went to Wisconsin, and it's such a contrast of styles. James Madison, run and gun. Wisconsin, obviously, they want to play a low tempo, low possession game, even though, you know, the addition of AJ Storr definitely helped them pick it up a little bit. But, you know, James Madison's going to be an older team. They've already knocked off Michigan State this year earlier in the season, but I don't think they're going to be afraid of Wisconsin. I don't think they're going to be afraid of a Big Ten team. So that'll be awesome. There's a lot of fun matchups out there. The Kansas-Samford game is also one. Like, these are, you know, I know like the 8-9 games are always a lot of the intrigue, or 7-10, but you know, some of these games are really these 4-13, 5-12 matchups. Absolutely. And one of these Bid Thieves is going to make either the not only the second round, but potentially the Sweet 16, even after we trash them the whole time. So,
and hopefully the hippie nerds at Vermont knock off Duke, because that would just be a capper to the last 3 weeks that Duke had, a real great 3 weeks they had. All right, so we'll let you go on this, because, and obviously, you know, you've been awesome, you know, giving me the time to talk all about college sports and then, you know, preview the bracket. Your final four picks.
Okay. Final four picks. These are obviously going to go perfectly. Out of the East, we're going to take the Connecticut Huskies. again, like I said, just losing four of the top five scorers and then doing this again to add a guy like Cam Spencer, for Alex Caravan to pick up his shooting like that, to add a blue chip NBA one and done prospect in Stephon Castle, and then to get Klingon to play essentially like Sonogo never was even there. It's amazing. Yeah. So I think Connecticut outlasts Iowa State in the East. In the West, I guess I'm going to go with, it's so stupid to be chalky, but you know, North Carolina, I mean, yeah, they lost to NC State, but that team is so well balanced. They've showed.
And it's a veteran team.
It's a veteran team. I think RJ is playing like, again, if Zach Edey didn't exist, he'd have a case for player of the year. So, and I feel like his game only elevates in March, and to have that experience from 2 years ago, it really helps for sure when you get to this stage. And then in the Midwest, I think, you know, I know everyone's going to hate on Purdue. I'm not going to pick Purdue. I'm going to pick Tennessee. I know both of these teams are teams that people love to pick against in March. I mean, Rick Barnes and Matt Painter have really had a tough go of it in the big dance. But I think Tennessee, the addition of Dalton Neck, makes them a totally different team. Zakai Ziegler, Josiah Jordan-James really know how to get after it. Jonas Adu is a good big that's really, really bangs the glass. And they're just a great defensive team, but they now have a scoring punch. So I'm going to take Tennessee to make the Final Four there. And then finally in the South, man, I just like there's a lot of teams with really high ceilings here. I'm going to go with Houston to break through and get there, because again, I'm just rooting for Kelvin Sampson to do this. And I think that this team, Jamal Shedd, a kid from Austin, Texas, who grew up right near University of Texas and wasn't recruited there. I just think that's it's just an incredible story. And yeah, let's say Houston plays in the Final Four.
So I have the same thing written out right here. UConn, UNC, Houston, and Tennessee. If I had to make one change, it would be Kentucky going to the Final Four over Houston. But I you know, the Houston resume has been great. And who do you have in the final game?
In the finals,
which is a shame, because I think that UConn and UNC would be the best title game. Personally,
I think, yeah, well, but we're gonna get to see it anyway in our world. So I think I'm gonna have UConn and I think UConn and Houston breakthrough. And then I'm going to take Houston to win the national championships. And yeah, Houston, most impressive team in the toughest conference in America, both at home, on the road. All these players have been in this setting before. They know what it means to prepare on a short turnaround. They know what it means to travel from hotel to hotel and do these press conferences and all the spotlights on you. I think that they are so ready to do this, and I get it. They got shellacked by Iowa State, but, you know, I think they can get there, and I think they'll be prepped, and I think they can upset the reigning national champions.
I want to pick UNC to make the final, but I'm not going to. I'm going to take UConn against Houston, but Houston winning. I know, but UConn winning, excuse me, but UConn going back-to-back. Wow. I know it's really hard to go back-to-back, but from everything that I've been reading, it just seems like they're the best team. And again, that probably means they're not going to do it, but that's what I'm sticking with. I do think that if Kentucky ends up coming out of that region, I think Kentucky's going to make the final game. I think that's the region that's going to make the finals.
Another would be another incredible story. Reed Sheppard, literally from Kentucky. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Reed Sheppard going to be a top five pick in the NBA draft, it seems like.
That's
Kevin O'Connor on The Ringer made a case that he should go number one, which is, if you took one look at him, you wouldn't think he was the number one overall pick, but hey.
You think he's a five-year player.
Yeah, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. Jordan, as you know, it's always great. We're going to have to run it back, talking about opening week of the tournament, recapping it. We'll do it again soon, but thanks so much for the time. We'll speak. Thanks again to recurring guest, Mr. Jordan Marks, my college sports expert, for coming on, talking all things college sports, the landscape of college basketball, previewing the tournament. One of my favorite episodes to do every single year, and he did not disappoint. So that's episode 247 for the love of the game. Take us out,
future. We're the one that kept it cool without it being until you can start acting. Shooting in like a film in a movie, don't let them have it. We ballin' like the Marsh Madness. All these cops shootin' getting tragic. I'm the one that living lavish, like I'm playing for the Mavericks. I don't want no for the bitch that might have made me for her even though she average.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list: teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too.
Aww.
I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.